Welcome to the Daily Authors Podcast. I'm your host, Aaron Gindel, and on today's awesome episode, I'm speaking with the lovely and talented Kirsten Samuel, author of Choosing a Way Out, When the Bottom Isn't the Bottom. Now, Kirsten is also the author of Five Lies Moms Believe and is an active blogger and coach. She believes that having a good day is a personal choice no matter your circumstances. Through overcoming her personal pain, Kirsten believes it is possible to define or redefine your legacy today, no matter your age, stage of life, or past mistakes. Now, writing from your country home in sunny Colorado, she and her husband celebrate the gift of each day. So if you're ready to hear more about Kirsten's incredible story and book, Choosing a Way Out, then stay tuned for this episode of the Daily Authors Podcast with Kirsten Samuel. Hey, by the way, if you're ready to write your book today, you can head on over to writeabookuniversity.com/free and get a free 4-lesson video course that'll help you on your journey to writing your book.
Welcome to the Daily Authors Podcast, a daily podcast all about books and the authors who gave them life. Each episode, your host interviews a new brilliant author as they reveal inside information about their incredible books and inspiring lives. Now, here's your host, Aaron Gindel.
Thank you so much, Kirsten, for joining me on the Daily Authors Podcast. It's so exciting to have you and here to talk about your book, Choosing a Way Out, When the Bottom Isn't the Bottom.
Yes.
Thank you again for joining me on the show, Kirsten.
It's my pleasure. It's my pleasure to be here, Aaron. Thank you very much for allowing me to be on your show and to talk to your listeners. That's a huge privilege. Thank you.
Awesome. Thank you. Well, before we dive into your book, why don't you just let the listeners in a little bit more about your life, yourself, your work, and what you've got going on right now?
Sure, certainly. I'd love to. I'm an author, coach, and a speaker, and my website is kirstendsamuel.com. And I'd love to, on the front page of that website, there is a free resource for your listeners. I'd love them to hop over there and grab that when they get a chance, if it's something that resonates with them. So I blog weekly. I produce a weekly YouTube video, and I'm also an editor and a ghostwriter, as well as being a wife, a mom, a grandma, you know, and all of that stuff. My husband and I are empty nesters, so we love living here in Colorado and try to enjoy the beautiful Colorado scenery and different activities around here as much as we can.
Awesome. Sounds like you're busy.
Yeah. Life is not boring, let's put it that way.
Great. Sounds like it's better that way, right?
Yes, yes.
Well, let's dive into your book, Choosing a Way Out. Would you mind just giving us the 30,000-foot view of your book, Kirsten?
Yes. About 12 years ago, my husband and I went through a marriage crisis, and it was precipitated by his revelation that he was addicted to pornography. But what I didn't know in the recovery process of that was the humongous internal growth and a lot of issues that were going to come up within me. And so the book is a memoir of sorts in that it chronicles our recovery from not only his pornography addiction, but my shock of all shocks that I was suicidally depressed. Wow. And so in the middle of his recovery, all of a sudden I'm having to deal with some issues that I had been suppressing for years. And the whole process of how God took us from a place of, were we going to survive in our marriage, to a thriving marriage, and a marriage that God didn't just put back together, he made completely brand new. Wow. And that's the message of the book.
Wow, so powerful. Well, would you mind sharing a little bit more about it and how maybe, what did you have to do and what, you know, if you could hone in on a specific chapter or section of the book, what would that be and what would you like to share with the listeners?
Sure. Well, first of all, I want to share with the listeners that pornography addiction is rampant in the United States, and I even believe across the world. I haven't dug into all of those statistics yet, but you know, if there are three people in the room, at least one has been either addicted or exposed to pornography, probably two. And it's not just a male problem. Women are increasingly more and more becoming addicted to pornography. And the shock of all shocks for me was that my husband was loving, attentive. I didn't feel like he was distant from me, like some women will say. And yet here on the side, he had this side addiction going on. And when he revealed that, he was actually caught at work, which was a violation of his company's policy. And that is a new statistic that is coming out now, the amount of lost work hours in the business place for people who are addicted to pornography. It's a huge issue. And it's a huge economic issue. It's affecting all of us because of lost productivity. But when he came home and told me what had happened, thankfully, we immediately reached out for help. And we had some friends, actually a coworker of mine at the time, who was a counselor. She and her husband were both counselors, and we reached out to them immediately. And through a very, very quick process, honestly, now I realize, we were set up with a group of people that we called a restoration team. They came around us. We went and had, we were counseled to get some real specific marriage counseling with a counselor that specializes in sexual addiction. And I've learned since then how key that was, Aaron. Yeah. You can go see a lot of counselors. A lot of people will go talk to their pastor about something like this, which is great. But if they don't have this specific training in sexual addiction, there's a lot of things they don't know how to deal with. And so I was so thrilled that we were connected with a counselor who specialized in that. And the very first thing that he said and that our counselor friend said to us is, "This is not fatal." And I needed to hear that, because when my husband told me what was going on, my world fell apart. I felt like it was fatal. I felt like my marriage of 25 years at the time was over. And I felt like I was a fool, that I had been taken advantage of. And yet, when I heard those words, "This is not fatal," I had hope. And that's what one of the messages that comes through my book is, that there is hope. It does not have to be fatal. There are certain steps that you do need to go through. And one of those is to learn to establish a healthy boundary in your marriage. And there's a lot of information coming out today that is wrong. It is saying that, you know, pornography enhances your marriage. Well, it does the exact opposite. Pornography focuses on the fact that I can meet my sexual needs and desires without having to express intimacy with another person. It completely demoralizes and dehumanizes the whole sexual experience. And that is not at all how God intended it to be. You know, He intended it to be the most beautiful expression of community and love between a husband and a wife. So we had to relearn what it meant to understand intimacy. We had to relearn how to talk to each other in a way that was authentic. We both realized that we were not being authentic with each other, because here he had this addiction, and then come to find out in our counseling that I'm suicidally depressed. And I was afraid that if I told him what I really thought in certain situations, that he would get mad at me and leave me because of what had happened in my own past and what I was not dealing with. So these two unhealthy, messed up people were trying to make this marriage work. And in the process of our counseling, and then our continued, I went on for additional counseling because of my depression. In the process of that, we learned what it meant to be able to be authentic, to be real, to be truthful no matter what, and that anger's not bad. It's what we do with it that's bad. You know, and disagreeing with your husband is not bad. I thought we had a wonderful marriage because we hardly ever fought. Well, that wasn't true. You know, if you never fight, if you never have a disagreement in your marriage, one of you is redundant. You know, you don't, because then you're not being yourself. You're not contributing to the marriage.
Yeah.
Well, I had to learn that it was okay to disagree, that disagreeing was not incorrect. And in fact, disagreeing was healthy. It was healthy for my husband. It was healthy for me. And it was healthy for my marriage.
Wow. So great to see that you both came out and you became better people, and together through the process. It doesn't always play in that way. And
no, it doesn't. And that's one of the things I want people to understand, is I want them to hear what we heard, and that the pornography addiction is not fatal. It does not have to be fatal, but it takes both of you being willing to say, "I'm going to do whatever I need to do to make this work." The person who's addicted needs to admit the addiction. The person who's been wounded by the addiction, and it, you know, a lot of times people say, well, it's just pornography. Well, the reality is that someone who's addicted to porn, it's as if they committed an affair, because they did. They're doing it in their minds. They're bringing someone else into the bedroom. They're breaking the intimacy between the husband and the wife. And so both of you have to be willing to become something new, to give it up, to find a different way. And when you're willing to do that, then it's so cool to see how God steps in and remakes that marriage.
Well, that's great. How did you overcome just being able to trust your husband, you know, through that process? Can you talk through that?
Great question. Trust is the thing that was shattered. I didn't believe a word he said. I didn't trust the thing that he was doing. And what I realized was that my trust had absolutely nothing to do with him. My trust had to do with my faith in God. And the more that I could trust God, the more that I could extend grace and forgiveness. And then when he would tell me something, I could say, okay, I'm going to choose to trust to believe you, and then just watch his actions. You know, because words are cheap, Aaron. We all know that. You can say anything you want to anybody. Yeah. But if your lifestyle, if your decisions, if your actions don't back it up, then your words mean nothing. And so what I watched were his actions. And to my husband's credit, he showed me how broken he was over what had happened. And he showed it to me in little things every day. You know, some of them were big things, but some of them, what really built the trust was the day by day by day faithfulness that I saw in him, and the change in his behavior and the change in his attitude. He wasn't justifying what he did. You know, so often when we get caught doing something we're not supposed to, we want to justify what we did.
Sure.
I've done it. You've done it. Everybody does it. That's just human. That's being human.
Yep.
But he gave up justifying his behavior. And the more he spent time being honest with me and saying, you know, I struggled really hard today because this is what was going on. And he identified his triggers that set him up to look at pornography, he was able to be more authentic with me. And that's just a huge gift that we give to each other.
Yeah. Well, that's great. Some great tips for anybody else maybe going through that, right?
Yeah.
Is there anything else you would say or want to share with the listeners or the readers, that one thing maybe they take away from reading your book? What would that be?
Well, my favorite chapter that I wrote in the book, which was probably one of the hardest chapters that I wrote, is called When You Have to Decide If You Do or You Don't. And what in my healing process, in my restoration process, and where I realized that my healing and the decision of whether my marriage was going to survive or not, I was taken back to the vows that I said on my wedding day. And that was 25 years earlier. So, you know, when you get to your wedding day and you're saying your vows, how many of us actually know what we said that day?
Right.
And I went back, and I believe God took me back through my vows, line by line. And this was early in our restoration process. And I really was at that point still ready to run. I was ready to bolt.
Sure.
I was like, I do not need this. I don't want this. I don't like this guy right now. I don't trust him. You know, I don't even want to be around him. And God started to take me through my vows line by line. And there was one line in the vows, and we did pretty traditional vows, but that I would keep myself only unto you for as long as we both shall live. And I thought, okay, I'm good on this one. I've done this one. And God took me back and he said, really? Because what I was angry with my husband about was that pornography was, he was doing this, you know, it was I and it was mine. And so I was saying, well, I'm a Christian woman, I'm a good Christian wife, and I had kept myself faithful. And my husband said, and God said to me, what about some of the books you've read? Now that one was really hard to take. But he took me through some books that I read. He reminded me about a book in particular that I was reading, which was a character study. It was an excellently written book. I mean, I love to read, and I love a good story that I can't figure out. And that's how this one was. I could not figure it out. But then I started getting into this book, and there became sections of it that were very sexual. And in the middle of reading this book, I just became convicted. And I actually put the book down and decided I was not going to finish the book, which absolutely irritated me because to this day, I don't know how the story ended, you know, and you know, it's just kind of hanging out there. But the reason was that by reading that portion of the book, I was actually getting involved in pornography, because pornography is anything that takes you away from your spouse, that diverts your attention and your intimacy with your spouse. It diverts it away. And that was the thing that I had to do when I wrestled through my vows. And when I got to the end of it in this chapter, and I write this all out very, very authentically. In fact, it was really very, very difficult to write. Yeah. But I realized that this was more about the promise that I had made to God when I stood in front of everybody, because I said before God and these people, and it was I going to, at the end of my life, stand before God one day and say, I, you know, just kidding, it got too hard? Or was I going to say that I, with your help, I'm going to keep my vow? And that was the challenge that God gave me. And when I wrestled that one to the floor, and it was a wrestling, when I wrestled that one to the floor, I realized, okay, God, if you're big enough to put this mess back together, then I'm going to stick it out and I'm going to keep going. And I'm so thankful today. I mean, I can't tell you the difference, Aaron, in my marriage today than what it was 12 years ago. In fact, wow. I often tell people that my husband's pornography addiction saved my life. Hmm. I would not have known about the suicidal depression. I would never have gone and sought counseling.
Yeah.
And when I discovered that suicidal depression and what was really going on in my mind, my body was starting to show the symptoms of having suicidal depression. And I think eventually it would have killed me. And so not only did his suicidal depression save our marriage, it also saved my life. And I wouldn't wish this on my worst enemy, what I went through. But at the same time, I wouldn't change it for anything, because who I am today, who my husband is today, what my marriage looks like today, what my family looks like today is so, so different and so much stronger. I'm so grateful.
That's incredible, Kristen. Thank you for sharing those stories.
Yes.
You've talked a lot about some of the major events with your relationships with your husband, obviously, but is there any other big failure maybe in your life or some event that you might consider a failure that you learned from that now you can look back and say, man, I grew from that. I learned from that.
Sure. Yeah. My late 20s, early 30s, I was put in a position of leadership. I was a dismal failure. Let's just say that I did not lead well. And that lesson, as I began my recovery, the lesson itself contributed into the depression, which was going on at that time. But as I've recovered, I realized the truth of what was going on and the fact that I looked at it as I was a complete failure. I can never lead anything again, you know, blah, 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 blah. Woe is me. And the reality of it was, no, you failed in these key areas, and those key areas played into my insecurities. And so it's helped me as I coach to see that, you know, the areas that we tend to fail in are the areas that affect our insecurities. You know, we can either, you know, pretend, you know, there's a big thing out there, fake it till you make it, you know. Well, what if instead of faking it till you make it, you learn, you grow, you change, you become very vulnerable in your leadership. Saying, instead of saying, coming off like, I know it, coming off and saying, you know, let's discover this together because I need to learn this as well. And bringing others in instead of pretending, because they know you don't know it. You know, we all think that we're coming off really smart and we're pulling it off. Not really. But instead of that, saying, you know, here's what I think we should do, but I am really open to some suggestions because I'm not really sure, but I trust you. I trust this other person. Let's do this together. And building the team instead of feeling like as a leader, it has to be my way or the highway. And that's what I was doing, my way or the highway, instead of learning to be in a collaborative environment. That was a huge lesson for me.
Yeah, great tips, great advice. Well, Kirsten, what about who has been most influential to you? Speak a lot about, you know, your faith obviously being a big part of who you are in your life. And you can speak more to that, or if there's some others that you might want to recognize as influencing you in your life to become who you are now and, you know, writing an amazing book like you have.
Well, I can think of several, really. I would say most recently, it would probably be my coach. You know, we all need someone who can coach us to become better. And I connected with my coach about 5 years ago, and he believed in me. In fact, he's the one who told me to write this book. Awesome. He believed in me before I did. He saw something in me that needed to be set free. And through his influence and some others who have come alongside him, I have changed. I have grown. I have matured. I have embraced even more authenticity. You can't write and talk about pornography addiction and confront that easily. Yeah. And he has believed in me every step of the way. And when I told him I thought it was time to tell this story that at that time had been about 10 years, he said, he agreed with me. He said, I think it's time. And it was through his encouragement that I kept writing it. And there were days, Aaron, that portions of the book were so painful for me to write, to go back through and to process through the next level of those emotions and the pain that we went through, that I would write him and say, I can't do it. I just can't. And he'd write back and he said, you're only writing it for one person right now, and just write it for that person. And that person is me. That person was the one who was stuck, the one who was hurt, the one who didn't know what the next step was going to be. And through that whole process, he taught me the value of looking back and then seeing and starting to count the growth and to notice the growth. Too often, Aaron, we tend to focus on what we can't do, what we haven't done, or what we didn't do right, what our failures were and all of that. But we forget to celebrate the wins that we get every day.
Yeah.
One of the most beautiful lessons I've learned in the process of recovering from depression, and I still have to watch it. I still have depression. It's not gone. But every day I look for something to celebrate. And it doesn't have to be anything big. But every day there is a reason for me to celebrate. And sometimes that reason is I woke up today. And that's enough.
Yeah. I totally agree. Having that breath in our lungs, right?
That's right.
Thanks again for sharing that, Kirsten.
Oh, my pleasure.
What about a favorite quote? Anything stand out, something you live by? Would you mind sharing that with the listeners?
I would. And that is, your past describes you. It does not define you. That's been very, very important to me.
That's great. Let's dive into the book writing process, Kirsten. What about some tips and tricks for our listeners? Anything that you maybe wish you had known before you started writing that you know now that you can help our listeners with if they were interested in writing a book?
Yes, there's a couple things that surprised me. And not everyone writes like I do. And that's one of the keys, is there's no perfect way to write.
Right.
Okay. And if you're a recovering perfectionist like I am, you're looking for that perfect way. Just give me the formula and I will do it. Now, there are certain parameters that you need to follow, but there's no perfect way to do it. And that was something I had to overcome. The second thing was, in my experience with writing, I'm not a linear writer. I'm a conceptual writer. So some people will write an outline and they will follow it, boom, 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 all the way down. Yeah. Well, as I was writing this book and as I was writing my other book, and I know when I've got another book brewing in the back of me, I know that my book is going to be conceptual. I'm going to write these thoughts. I'm going to write these scenarios. And then eventually I will put it back together. The third part is, there are two kinds of writers. There are writers and there are editors. And if you're an editor while you're writing, you shut yourself down. So yes, you do need to go back and edit. But if you're trying to edit as you're writing, you're cutting your creativity. So turn the editor off, you know, just shut that part of your brain down and just write. one of the best ways I learned to do that was a lesson, and I can't remember, I've heard it now from several different people, but to set a timer for 15 minutes, look at a blank screen, or if you're going to do it longhand, a blank piece of paper, and just start writing the very first things that come to your mind. And just write for 15 minutes. And then as soon as the timer stops, you stop dead. You don't keep going. And it's called junk writing. Okay? There's other words for it too, but I call it junk writing. And sometimes in that junk writing, because you're just literally, there were times I looked out the window and I just wrote about what I saw. Little nuggets will come out that will give you, that's what you've been needing for what you're working on. Those nuggets will come out because you're just allowing your brain to process. And it's kind of fun to see what you write after you get into this habit.
Amazing tips. Thank you so much for sharing those with our listeners. Yes. What about writer's block, Kirsten? Have you had that? And I'm sure you have, but maybe you can talk through how you worked yourself through that process with especially your latest book.
Yes. I find that my writer's block comes when I allow my insecurities to come to the surface and get in the way. And so there have been times that I just sit down and tell myself, you're going to do this, and I can overcome that. But on the times when it's just really, really a struggle, I go and do something else. Like I go for a walk, or I go and start preparing dinner, or I go and listen to music, or, you know, just the whole fact of the best one for me is going for a walk, especially if I can go outside and walk, because all of a sudden the creative juices start flowing. And then there are days when I just literally nothing would come, and I had to forgive myself in those moments and say, it's okay. Tomorrow's going to be different. So what can I do today that helps me in the process of whatever I'm working on? And that could be research. That could be, you know, reviewing other authors in that field, in that genre. There are other things that you can do instead of getting stuck and saying, I'm stuck, I can't do anything. What are the other things you can do? So really giving yourself grace and saying, it's okay, I'm going to get over this and I'm going to move through it. Those are some ways that I have found to keep going.
Love those tips. Thank you.
You're welcome.
What about now that you've been able to publish your book, you've got a couple books out there. What would you say has been the best part about writing a book for you, Kirsten?
Great question. The best part about writing a book? Well, one, I did it. You know, I mean, the statistics are that there's, 90% of people would like to write a book someday, and very few do.
Yeah.
So I've done it. The second part is, especially because of the topic that Choosing a Way Out deals with, the topics of pornography addiction and suicidal depression. There, when I'm coaching women, and I coach women whose husbands are addicted to pornography, there's nothing anyone can say to me that's going to make me blush or be ashamed. And somebody says, well, I don't know if I can talk to you about this. And I look at them and I say, no, I wrote a book about it. You can tell me, you know? So I'm not embarrassed. There's no shame attached to my story, because yeah, I know that by telling my story, somebody else needs to hear it. And you know, as an author, Erin, that one of the biggest compliments you get is when somebody says, I read your book and that's exactly how I feel. And that's exactly what I needed to hear. Now I have hope. And that is one of the biggest blessings right there.
Absolutely. Well, you're doing some amazing things, Kirsten. I wanted to just ask if I've missed anything at all, and if you could step into my shoes, what would you have asked yourself that I didn't?
No, that's another great question. I think I would have asked why I decided to tell the story. Like I said, pornography addiction is not a normal topic that people want to hear about. And the reason that I decided it was time was, one, I felt very prompted to write it. And in the process of starting to write the book, my husband reminded me that our counselor, our marriage counselor, said, I hope you're taking notes or writing this down because other people need to know the processes that you've been through. They need the hope that comes from recovering from this kind of a blow to your marriage and to your own selves. I had not remembered that, but I knew that somebody out there needed to know there was a different way than just divorce or living in a marriage where you hate each other or putting up. A lot of women think that they can't say anything. They can't counteract the addiction. They can't call it what it is.
Yeah.
So there's, you know, those are all very negative ways to deal with a pornography addiction. And I wanted them to know there's a better way. There's another way. And this way results in your healing, your spouse's healing, and your marriage's healing. And that's really what I wanted.
Amazing. Well, Kristen, we're wrapping it up here. I wanted to tell you thanks again so much for being on the show. You mentioned your website earlier in the podcast, but if you wouldn't mind sharing that again, and just, it seems like you gave a little sneak peek about your book coming up. Maybe you could just share a little bit more about what you're up to next.
Sure. The website is kirstendsamuel.com, and that's spelled KIRSTEN, D as in Diane, Samuel, SAMUEL.com. There's a lot of free resources on there, like I said, for your listeners. Right on that homepage, there's a free ebook that says the 10 warning signs your gut already knows. And I would love people to read that, give me some feedback on it, see if that resonates with you. My next book project is completely different, and I'm very, very excited about it. And it is actually a story. It'll be fiction. It'll be historical fiction. In fact, in about 1 month, I'm going to be in Europe doing research on this.
Wow, amazing.
And so I'm very excited about it. And it is my grandmother's immigration story. I have obviously known this story my whole life, but I'm actually going to where she emigrated from.
Wow.
And be doing some research there and visiting the area so that I can begin to picture where she was and experience it. And I've never written fiction before, so this is going to be a challenge. And I'm really excited about it.
Awesome. Super fun.
Yeah.
Well, thanks again. And congrats on choosing a way out. I know it's already helping a lot of people and will continue to help people, which is the power of books. So thanks again, yeah. Kirsten, for writing it and sharing it with me today.
Thanks so much. And this has just been a huge privilege. Thank you.
Thank you, Kirsten. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Thanks for listening to the Daily Authors Podcast. Be sure to visit dailyauthors.com to join the conversation, access the show notes, and discover our fantastic bonus content.